Thus the great sages,
Sanakana
Sanatan, Sanandana Sana, Kumara, upon reaching the above mentioned Vaikuntha in the spiritual world, by dint of their mystic yoga performance, perceive unprecedented happiness. They found that the spiritual sky was illuminated by highly decorated aeroplanes, piloted by the best devotees of Vaikuntha, and was predominated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is one without a second. He is above everyone. No one is equal to Him. Nowhere is anyone greater than Him. Therefore, He is described here as Vishva Guru. He is a prime living entity of the entire material and spiritual creation. He is Bhuvanaika Vandyam, the only worshipable personality in the three worlds. The aeroplanes in the spiritual sky are self-illuminated and are piloted by great devotees of the Lord. In other words, in the Vaikuntha planets, there is no scarcity of things which are available in the material world. They are available, but they are more valuable because they are spiritual and therefore eternal and blissful. The sages felt an unprecedented happiness because Vaikuntha was not predominated by an ordinary man. The Vaikuntha planets are predominated by expansions of Krishna, who are differently named as Madhusudana, Madhava, Narayana, Pradyumna, etc. These transcendental planets are worshipable because the Personality of Godhead personally rules them. It is said here that the sages reach the transcendental spiritual sky by dint of their mystic power. That is the perfection of the yoga system, the breathing exercises and disciplines to keep health in proper order are not the ultimate goals of yoga perfection. The yoga system, as generally understood, is Ashtanga Yoga or Siddhi, Eightfold Perfection in Yoga. By dint of perfection in yoga, one can become lighter than the lightest and heavier than the heaviest. One can go wherever he likes and can achieve opulences as he likes. There are eight such perfections. The rishis, the four Kumaras, reached Vaikuntha by becoming lighter than the lightest and thus passing over the space of the material world. Modern mechanical space vehicles are unsuccessful because they cannot go to the highest regions of this material creation, and they certainly cannot enter the spiritual sky. But by perfection of the yoga system, one not only can travel through material space, but can surpass material space and enter the spiritual sky. We learn this fact also from an incident concerning the Rasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish. It is understood that in 1 year, the Rasa Muni traveled everywhere and went into the spiritual sky to meet the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. By present standards, scientists calculate that if one could travel at the speed of light, it would take 40,000 years to reach the highest planet of this material world. But the yoga system can carry one without limitation or difficulty. The word yogamaya is used in this verse, yogamaya balena vaikuntham. The transcendental happiness exhibited in the spiritual world and other spiritual manifestations there are made possible by the influence of yoga maya, the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha, Om Shivaya, Krishna Prasaya, Mukade, Mukade, Jan, Samya, Namaste, Sarasvata, Gauravani, Vachana, Devi, Shesha, Shanyavani, Pasadhyana. Translation again, the great sages, Sanaka, Sanatan, Sananda, and Sanat Kumar, upon reaching the above mentioned by Kundas, in the spiritual world by dint of their mystic yoga performance, to seek unprecedented happiness. Unprecedented happiness. They found that the spiritual sky was illuminated by highly decorated aeroplanes, piloted by the best devotees of Vaikuntha, and was predominated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this chapter, the further descriptions of the spiritual world, spiritual reality, are given for our contemplation. Here it is, Lord Brahma is narrating the story of the four Kumaras, who I think of their spiritual perfections, or yogi perfections. They were able to enter into the spiritual world, because it's by becoming lighter than the lightest. We find out in the finest, earth, water, fire, air, sky, ether, mind, intelligence, and ahamkara. So these things get finer and finer, these coverings. So if one can, by the secret manipulation of them, according to the system given by the Lord Himself in the Vedas, one can he becomes above these things, or these things become under his control. So the ultimate degree of control everyone is trying to control in this world. The karmis, they're trying to control the situation for their enjoyment. The yogis, they've given up enjoyment. Yogis and the jnanis, they've been karmis many births before, and they're tired of that struggle to enjoy, to make the situation nice so it will be peaceful and can enjoy it. That's a gradual elevation. And after many many births, one is very strictly follows these systems, religious systems, given in the Vedas, then one is one's consciousness is gradually elevated. So then one generally would, when one sees the utility of material life devoid of Krishna, devoid of consciousness, then one tries to become free from it. So then one becomes, then it takes the path of Gyan, Nibriti Mark, and practice yoga, and by dint of those practices one can actually become free from the influence of the modes of nature, which is considered a great, very great achievement. You can say Brahma Bhuta, Prasanatmana, in Bhagavad Gita, that once one attains this state of Brahma Bhuta, no higher happiness. Brahma Sutta, happiness of Brahma, there's no higher happiness. So these Kumaras, they've achieved that. They were self-realized yogis. So much so that they stopped the aging process of their body. They kept their bodies at about 5 years old. So they wouldn't have any problems with following social etiquettes, and also being disturbed by other things that come in, e.g. puberty, etc. They'd be free from all those things. And so they could do whatever they wanted with them. So that's how powerful they were. Of course, these are the sons of Lord Brahma. And they entered this spiritual world, and they're surprised that, you know, it's so nice there. Right, they're on the Brahma Sutta platform. No higher happiness, and that's a prize. Fantastic, isn't it? Wow, really fantastic. Enjoyment, so much enjoyment. Unprecedented happiness. In the spiritual sky, fantastic place, and all these beautiful aircraft flying around. Made of the pastel of Zuli, gold and emeralds. there may have those airplanes also Satchidananda. With the pilots, everything is fully conscious. It's difficult to understand. But those airplanes, they're all fully conscious. Satchidananda. So when you're there, when you're in that consciousness, in that world, you can actually perceive that Satchidananda. You can actually perceive consciousness of the entities there. So everything there is vibrant with bliss, knowledge, eternity. Everything is of the same nature. So who can believe this? when ordinary people read these descriptions, they say it's just mythology, eh? You go to the library often, you'll find the Bhagavad Gita under mythology. that how is it possible? How could this be? How is it possible? How can it be like that? But at the same time, the materialists are hell bent in trying to get that exact same situation. Exactly what they want. This is a description of the spiritual sky, of the reality, and it's exactly what they want. It's exactly what they're trying for in a material world, without proper knowledge. So why does everyone, they want this, they want to go to an atmosphere where there's no scarcity, there's no restriction. Right? So here, you want to do these things, you want to fly in the sky, but there's so much restriction. The air is not so much restriction. You go to the land, there's a lot of restriction. You go to the water, there's less restriction. You go to the air, there's even less restriction. But it's so much endeavor just to go through the air on an airplane, for the airplanes that we make, right? So much endeavor for that airplane to get off the ground. So much endeavor is going to that. Before the sound and the pollution, it's really gross. Really gross thing. It goes off. They've done it. Really gross thing. So a wind blows and the airplane goes like this. They get caught in one of those storms. Maybe some of you have experienced. Because Prabhupada said when he was on the ship with the Jaladutta, just looking out at this vast expanse of ocean, and he saw the ship was just like a little matchstick, a twig on the ocean from a distance. So he thought how vulnerable this life is, how vulnerable this material nature is. And then they're trying to make a nice situation. So they paint the airplane nice, with nice stripes, a nice logo, a nice design. I was looking at a moth the other day, a moth that was sitting on the floor, and it was exactly the same shape, I don't know the name of it, like what's that bomber, American bomber airplane, I can't remember the name now. V2, something like that. The Delta Wing one? And then the tail goes back, and then it juts out a bit and sticks out a bit, and then there's a smaller tail at the back. It's exactly that. They probably got it, and it seems fast. I went here, I was going to look at it, and I was in my magnifying glass, you're done. So they probably got the dynamics from studying these things, and I think they'd like to study birds also, how they fly it, to get the aerodynamics so they can design the airplane. But this one was exactly like that, blank. Exactly the same shape. If it's already there, Krishna's already done it, we have to endeavor so hard. because there's so much resistance in the fine air, then you have to have pressurized cabins, right? Sit in there pressurized. You can't do it otherwise. So it's so much difficulty to do anything. There are no pressurized cabins in these Vaikuntha airplanes. They're out there, the ladies and the men, and they're really having a nice time. They've got the guns and they're just flying in a nice breeze. And they're going up thousands and thousands of miles an hour if they want. There's no restriction. Time works differently there. And there's no noisy engines, and there's no rattling. But that's what we're trying for, right? We have to pressurize the cabinet. In this paper, the airplane was going along and the emergency door flew off. It wasn't closed properly. And then some people, along with their seats, because you have to strap yourself in, right, just in case, then two or three seats went flying out with the people on it. So you've got a safety belt on, but a seat went out the door. We like them, but it's not very nice. But that's the situation. That's what you're against. There's so many obstacles in the material world. Everything is against you. There's so much pressure, so much resistance to do anything. But there, that's absent. That's absent. That's why, because there's so much resistance here, that's why Brahma Sukha is so highly valued. It's so highly praised that to be liberated is really glorified. If you can actually get liberated from this, it's such a wonderful thing. Because in that, it means you're liberated from the modes of nature. There's no pressure there. There's no restriction. But so they've already passed that. They passed the idea of trying to enjoy material. They passed the idea of trying to enjoy it all in the material world. They become above it. And they're on the highest platform of experiencing it. But when they came into Vaikuntha, it was not that much. It was going on. It's fantastic. It was fantastic feeling. And it's actually there. It's pure sense gratification. Because here these bodies, Krishna says, you just take a body according to your karma. It's just a group of senses, a bag of senses grouped around the mind. That's all that actually the body is. We're not that. But that's all it is. And as soon as you agitate, the sense agitation, sensation, right? You get some sensation when there's sense agitation, and that sensation causes it goes to the consciousness and causes some whatever some emotions or some thing like that, and then the mind says gets all its registered coming in through to the mind, and the mind says, well, that's good, that's nice, going towards it, well, that's not so nice, and going away from it. That's all that's going on. That's the conditions living the soul. That's all that's going on in the material world. When it's something nice, you lean towards it. When it's something bad, you lean against it. This pressure is there in the material world for the conditioned soul. It's so difficult to overcome. That's why it's so difficult to have a healthy, trouble-free life, which everyone wants. It's so difficult to do that. Everyone wants to stay healthy and fresh. They're ready to enjoy, but to maintain it is so difficult. And the body is anyway doomed, apart from your diseases that come along and the calamities that are unexpected. It's going to get old and it's going to wither and it's going to vanish again. So we put in all our eggs, we put in all our faith in this thing which is not really us, which is not in our real interest, this sense gratification. It's not in our real interest. But in the spiritual world, the sense gratification is real. Because in the spiritual world, you are the body. So then, therefore, there's ultimate sense gratification there. That it's perfect there. There's no hindrance in sense gratification. It's fantastic. So that's why apparently the Vaikuntha Vasis, they don't like supreme sense enjoyers, superficially. But it says there is wonderful here, because actually it is predominated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the most wonderful thing. So just like that Brahma Sukha is the most wonderful thing, achievement in this material world, to become actually free from it is the most wonderful thing. So to achieve that spiritual variegatedness is even more wonderful. And amongst that variegatedness, spiritual variegatedness, that Supreme Personality of Godhead is even more wonderful still. That relationship they have with Him, the driving force there, that the pressure there is love in the spiritual world. Like here, we have pressure here to do anything. The pressure, the force there is love. That's how you're going. Here it's we're seeking shelter, seeking happiness. So that is a driving force. Many people aren't peaceful in this world, you see. The driving force is that you've got to have shelter, you've got to have protection. And when you've got a little shelter, now you can be, that's actually Brahma Sutra, more or less. Now, but it's not actually happiness. How can I enjoy that? The idea is to, you know, to get your nice facility, to get your nice education, to get your nice job, to get your nice fit start with your bank balance and insurance policy and everything. Now you can enjoy it, right? That's what it's all about. That's what all this struggle, work to get all these things is for, that you can actually enjoy them. That's what they're there for, to keep the troubles away. But we see, it's still that people are still dissatisfied when they make it materially. Because if they did some research, little booklet from a youth forum in Calcutta, about the 10 richest men in the world in 1960 and their futures. You know, few of them committed suicide, about half of them. One went mad, the other one, you know, it was all practically disastrous ends. And they were the richest people in the world at that particular time. Because it's still not satisfaction. That's just getting that status quo. It's the same as Brahma Sutra. That sutra is not really sutra. It's such a relief to get out of that, to not have to be pushed for shelter and pulled for enjoyment. It's such a relief, that thing. They think, oh, this is great, this is wonderful. But actually, it's not. It's just, that's normal. That's a Brahma Buddha. That's your Pratishtha. That's the middle. Not this, not that. That's Shanti. You're peaceful, at least. But that peace is considered a great pleasure because of the, when you're looking at the material world. When you're out of the material world, then it's not really pleasurable. It's just static. Just the same. You know, not good, not bad. It's peaceful. But when you go into the spiritual world, then again, it says that happiness of the Brahma Sukha fades like the stars when the sun rises. You don't even notice the stars are disappearing, you just don't see them. When the sun comes up, then those stars become insignificant, which were wonderful at night. So that same thing, that Brahma Sukha, when you're without the sun, without the spiritual variegatedness, then it's wonderful, it appears wonderful. But when that comes, then that Brahma Sukha just disappears. And then the Kumaras, they forgot all about that. Forgot all about that, the Brahman realization aspect of the normal way they felt better than anyone else in the material world, right? We're the best of them, better off than anyone else. They forgot all about that because they got something much better. So that became insignificant. So it's like material sense enjoyment becomes insignificant for the yogis and the jnanis because they actually get something better. So then, for the devotees, then they get even more than that. They get something better than the Brahman. And amongst the devotees, the ones that have established their relationship with the Supreme Personality of God, like everyone has in the spiritual world, then that is the most important thing. That is the highest happiness. That is the force. Once your relationship is established, and that force of love is so great, drawing you towards that, that is, everything else becomes insignificant. So it says that even though they have beautiful husbands, beautiful wives, beautiful body, beautiful facility for enjoyment, beautiful sense objects, all immediately available when you want, they're not interested. And they only use them in the service of the Lord. Why should they when you've got something better? So that is the absolute nature and the unprecedented happiness that you find in the spiritual world. Isn't that what we all want? So why do they call it mythology? And we're working so hard to achieve that. We want airplanes that move without any resistance, that don't make a sound, that are comfortable. We're trying to develop all the technologies going on, and the transportation, and everything you do, the living accommodation, right? The communication system. Yeah. And we're trying to do what is what they want. It's already there. So this, in one sense, proves that the spiritual world exists. Because why is everyone after the same thing? Human beings, intelligent people. Why is everyone moving away from distress and moving towards happiness? Because it's natural. It's unnatural to suffer. The soul doesn't suffer. The soul is ananda by nature. So everyone is trying to do that. It's indication that is the natural existence, because everyone's trying to achieve that. And so in the same way we're trying to imitate the spiritual world by material things, it's an indication that reality does exist. That is the reality. Our perfection in material thing is the actual spiritual reality. We want to live in this life without any hindrance and no happiness. That's what everyone would like. No one would disagree with that. We want to be nice, happy, economically well developed and happy without any restrictions in sense gratification. That's the ultimate goal of material existence, I would guess. And that's what the governments are promising, that's what the scientists are promising. Tomorrow, we get it tomorrow, don't worry. You won't have to travel in this. And they're working hard for it. I mean, hard for it. And we're paying lots of money for it. All the taxes are going for this defense, how we can defend better. But that's already there. It's already there. It's an indication that that's already there. A place without anxiety by Kunta. We think if we get a nice army, then they won't be frightened to attack us. Then we can live peacefully. Or maybe somebody's trying to attack you, then you've got to have an army. But that's it. The whole idea is that it's fearing. We're in a fearful situation because, you know, Pakistan is getting the atomic bomb and China's trying to climb over the wall. Whatever. So then you've got to have something to retaliate. So therefore you've got to pay a lot of taxes to get that. You have to have it out of fear. If you don't have it, then someone will tread on you. That's the material way of life. The strong will tread on the weak and make them conform to their way of life. That's history. So it's a fearful place. A fearful situation. Hard struggle for existence, Prabhupada calls it. We can practically experience. It's difficult. But what do we want? In our material perfection, if everyone sits down, all the great heads of the world sit down and say, what we actually like, you know, greatest perfection. They'll write down, you'll get a description of the spiritual world without God. I would imagine. Right? There'd be no restriction in sense enjoyment. No restriction in time and space. They would have that down. It's already there. The only thing is that we're putting ourselves in the center. Materials put themselves in the center. And then we can be really free to enjoy. But here we've got a further description, a much more esoteric description. They have all that. They've achieved that. And they're not interested. What? All this sense gratification available. You can take it, and there's no simple reactions even. You enjoy it unlimitedly. Why not? They've obviously got something better. So that's the relationship the Supreme Personality Godhead is ruling over that planet. And it's by his influence that all these opulences are there. So they're not affected by all this sense gratification and powerful senses. It doesn't affect them. They've got something better. So that's our process also in the practice of bhakti, is to actually develop a relationship with Krishna. We develop a higher taste in Krishna consciousness giving up what's unfavorable, rejecting what's unfavorable, accepting what's favorable for Krishna consciousness. After a period of time, one gets purified and one gets a higher taste. As one's naturally, one looks just on the mechanical practice of sadhana bhakti, naturally will come free from the molds of passion and ignorance because of our sadhana. Because what's favorable for Krishna and what's unfavorable? What's unfavorable is that more or less what's in the mold of passion and ignorance, and what's favorable is more or less in the mold. So naturally, you're going to become peaceful, the mind will become more peaceful over a period of time, become more satisfying. So, that's our program. that eventually eventually we come to know. Prabhupada said, scripture says that also the mode of Krishna says, also the mode of goodness is also contaminated in the sense that in the mode of goodness there's not much pressure from the material energy. If there was no pressure here, if there was no pressure in the material world at defending and enjoying, no restrictions, no hindrance, Kunta, who would care about liberation? No one would even mention liberation. Right? You could get exactly what you wanted here. No one would care about liberation. Why? So it's only when one is enlightened, one in consciousness, one is actually liberated, then one can say, oh, this is not good. So it's only by achieving a higher place that when your relationship with Krishna starts to be established, it's so nice that then you're not interested in sense gratification anymore. You don't have much interest in mind. So that's our process. We have to achieve the higher place. Come through Anartha Nivritti, and Anartha Nivritti is the hard work of Sarana Bhakti. And then we become peaceful, Shanta. That's Anartha Sugam, actually, that's Nishta. And then Ruchi, then taste, oh, there's something better. So because there's something better, then we're not interested in trying to control the situation, because we're trying to control for our comfort, for our happiness. So we won't be interested in that hardly. Only the bare necessities of life. We won't be interested in all the other unnecessary things. And the attractions of Maya or sense gratification. Also, that won't be there because you have something better. Because it's actually a higher place, it's actually a better pleasure. Pleasure is the goal, don't worry. You're still looking for pleasure. And that will always be there until you actually establish your relationship with Krishna. Then you can understand that his pleasure, by acting for his pleasure, I'm feeling so ecstatic, more than I've ever felt ecstatic before. So then you forget about your own pleasure and act for his pleasure. So that's it, and the actual constitution of the living entity. So you're not going to improve on that situation. There you're perfectly naturally situated. You're serving the Lord for his pleasure, the way he wants you to do. So that's our path also. But until you've actually tasted, until you've actually experienced these higher tastes, then the other tastes are still attractive. This is the best you've got. It's the best happiness you've got. So it's naturally this that's still attraction for that. So these are evidences that the spiritual world is what it says, because by these great people that have been to the spiritual world, the great self-realized souls, and they're amazed. They're amazed at the fantastic beauty of it. Not only the beauty, but everything is Satchitananda. Those airplanes, they can change their form if they want. They can change their shape, change their colour. Make you more happy, right? Get into the mind, and sometimes it changes according to your design. It'll change. And it's also a personality. Who wants to be an airplane in Vaikuntha? Why not? Some do. I think you want to be, a Lord's personal attendant or one of the queens. No, this is actually Das Das and the Das. I don't think there's any. You know, there's no hesitation to take any form for the Lord's pleasure. That's their greatest pleasure. So you see what this struggle we've got to be up front, to be on top, to be close. It's just not there. They're perfectly satisfied. How can we serve the Lord? But he wants to be, they want, his devotees want to drive around an airplane and not look at it. So everything there is, although even the inanimate things, they're perfectly capable of taking any form they want. But generally, if you're worshipping the form of, for those that can be worshipping the form, worshipping the Lord in Chandra Ras, then you'll take one of those forms, because that's the way you want to, how you want to serve the Lord. So generally, it depends on the desires of the living entity. But above all that, the main thing is that this is predominated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know that Krishna Narayan is there. He's always there protecting us with everyone he's supplying. He's always there. He's so charming. He's always, when you can go and see him. And he's so captivating, so beautiful looking. So youthful. That's one of his main opulences. He's Navayovana. He's very youthful. with his beautiful ornaments, with jewels on his arms, and beautiful shaped body, like Yuntamala and Yellow Dhoti. He says the dhoti is like yellowish, like the sun rays, only they bend. The dhoti bends sometimes. When you see sun rays, they don't usually bend. So everything is super attractive, especially his beautiful face and that youthful appearance. Now he's the Lord of Vaikuntha. He's like a 15-year-old boy. If I went in my consciousness, because I think I'm an older person, a man, and he's a young boy, and he's so charming, and he has that adolescent innocence that, you know, you think, you know, he's the kind of person you want to give some advice to how to manage the kingdom, but actually he's a free person who's got it. And so he's completely devoted, he's completely captivated. How he deals and how he talks is very deep, yes. Sometimes, you know, that they, when he speaks to the commandments, they'll find out that they can't understand whether he's joking with them or whether he's dead serious. Or they just can't fathom his words. He's so. And, you know, you can't put him in a box. You just don't know what to expect. And he's all attractive. At the same time, he's all attractive. That force of love is impelling you there. But at the same time, you don't know, you know, it's like that. That's why it's so exciting. You can't explain, but we can understand a little bit how he is all attractive and always and compassionate. Sometimes he looks and he's dealing with people in a compassionate way. That means he's very concerned for them, although there's no anxiety there. Or he becomes, that means he, but that's one another of his greatest qualities, that he's subordinate to his devotees. Which is actually a contradictory nature to God. That he becomes subordinate, he becomes affected by his devotees' distress, or then he and he becomes subordinate to them. But that's why he's difficult to understand, so he's so attractive. You can never completely understand him. Otherwise he's always you know, enjoying and the way his eyes move, the way his eyebrows move, the way he deals with everyone so charmingly. You know, beyond the fault. Everyone is completely mesmerized. And he's caught, all his associates are there, Sri, there, who is there, Lakshmi. Open hands, and he's taking it and looking at it, smiling and chewing it. And his lips are very red, like a dimmer fruit. So when he chews a pan, they become more red. And his teeth are very white and shiny, and he says his teeth are so nice, it's so even and like pearls. And you can see the reflection of his sudan with his jasmine black garments on, and you can see the reflection on his teeth. So, you know, someone's obviously been there to write these descriptions, otherwise how do you think of something like that? But every tiny part of him is so absorbing, it's so attractive. It's so attractive. And this is the force. So once I know the Supreme Personality of Godhead, now what does speak of liberation? What does speak of this material world, even that unlimited sense of aggregation? They're only interested they can use it in those things in the service of the Lord, otherwise they have no use for them. Otherwise those things don't manifest. They manifest as living entities, they manifest in the form to increase the Lord's pleasure. That's the spiritual world. So that's what we actually want. If you think about it, that's what we're like. We actually want that. You can't improve on this situation, it's very esoteric. But just a spiritual world. By the way we act here, we can see that. If we could continue unhindered, we could create the spiritual world here. But unfortunately we would be the center and enjoy it. So then we'd miss out on the real thing, the presence of Bhagavan ki jai, Bhagavan ki jai, Bhagavan ki jai.